Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm John.
And welcome to the show. This week we will review Salem's Lot. John will give us a five-word plot summary. We'll go over our first thoughts, and then we'll go into a deeper spoiler analysis. But first, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm doing all right. You know, 250,000 gone. I don't know. It's been a wild year. I got to ask you a question though, real quick. Was that a Freudian slip or
about what?
You said to the shit. I mean, show.
So,
do you have an opinion on this movie we're talking about today?
Yes, I think you and I are going to have a very strong opinions about Salem's Lot.
Holy shit! Yeah, before we say them though. I feel like I have a few things to just unload about this film. First off, for the five word description, I think I'm gonna make it a question this time.
All right.
Is it better than Twilight? I don't know. We'll find out. I did cheat a bit today because we talked about before we started the show. How I watched this back like Sunday, Monday, and part of Tuesday. So I was like, well, let me try to refresh for a second. And, you know, this movie has a lot of things going for it. Like all these actors that became a lot bigger later, but you got Fred Willard. You've got the, what's his name? The dude that sings that song, something Soul.
David Soul.
David Soul. who's also Hutch, right? From the original Starsky and Hutch?
Yeah, yeah. He's Hutch from Starsky and Hutch.
And these two reviews I saw, one was an English guy, one was an Australian guy. I'm going to say they were probably younger than we are. They had such a love for this like classic, iconic vampire movie. Talking about how terrifying they were as kids watching this and just the makeup and how spooky and scary these people were as vampires. And oh god, I have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. When I say this was a load of crap, I was like, holy shit, this is like, I don't want to call it a train wreck. I feel like stuff started happening at the 3 hour mark.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. I was like, holy shit, there's still an hour left in this movie.
Yeah.
Nothing. I shouldn't say nothing. Not a whole lot about this made any sense to me. In particular, the dialogue. They were playing like the no pronoun game for like the first 45 minutes. And I was like, what the fuck is anybody talking about? How does anybody know what they're talking about? Oh my god. I felt like it would have been a fun game for us to just like back and forth try to remember and paraphrase the entire movie for the audience, but
wow, strong opinions right out of the gate.
Yeah. They could have just recut the same scenes in the movie over and over again. I don't think I would have noticed.
Yeah. So okay. So those are your
sorry. Disappointing. I should be a big horror fan, but this is this was not my cup of tea, I guess. I'm maybe too old to be watching it at this point, is what it felt like.
Or too young.
Or too young, yes.
Yeah, so Salem's Lot. You gave us the five word plot summary, your first thoughts. just kind of more context for me was I've never seen this movie, but this was one of those movies that I wanted to watch because it's a Stephen King, based on a Stephen King book, and I just never seen it. I've seen pretty much anything, any of his movies, I'll check out. So I've never seen this movie. So I thought, hey, why not try it out? And as it's described in IMDb, a novelist and a young horror fan attempt to save a small New England town which has been invaded by vampires. Now,
yeah, spooky.
This plot, I mean, this movie,
though, you gotta stay spooky.
Yeah, this movie just moves at a snail's pace. Like, there's so yeah. many things, just like you said, there's so many things just like not happening in this movie. You know, there's just,
oh man, yeah.
And by the time we like rev up to the vampire stuff, it's done so, I don't know, cheesy or just melodramatic, yeah. soap opera-ish.
And I also feel like they forgot the glue that ties a lot of this story together towards the end.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think as a Stephen King, even as a Stephen King adaptation movie, I don't think it was very good.
No, I mean, Tobe Hooper too.
Yeah, I guess,
I don't know.
That was one of the things also that I wanted to, one of the reasons why I wanted to check it out, because of Tobe Hooper was Hooper was the director. Yeah. He had just come off of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so.
Right, and I guess I heard they may have had George A. Romero first.
Yeah.
But then he passed on it. And then they got some other guy that did something, and then he passed on it too. And then Tobe Hooper was like, yeah, Steven, let's do a bunch of drugs and make a movie. Let's write this script. Let's play a game with this script. Let's make sure the first 45 minutes, we don't use pronouns or names, so you have no idea who's who. And then when they have conversations, they sound so cryptic, you think maybe everybody's spooky because I don't understand them. And yeah. I might apply that to any scripts or songs I write in the future.
So this movie was released in, was it 1979? And of the time, this was a TV movie and it was heralded as cinematic. It was to the point where they actually cut a movie version of it that's much shorter, leaves out a bunch of stuff. And I think the version we both saw was the TV movie version. Just all kind of cut together.
Also, we actually got extra scenes too.
Oh,
that weren't in either version, I think. Specifically, the end. I guess I won't break into that yet. But they change a location, or the location they're filming at. That wasn't a part of the original cut.
Yeah, just as a movie, I mean, I not the best movie. It was hard to sit through. No. But I think there were positives to take from this. I mean, I can get into those, like, in, you know, we talk more, you know, we do like a spoiler analysis and everything. I think there are things that we can, you know, that are there, you know, that are worth looking at, you know, but as a movie, I really could not I could not recommend this movie.
No. I wish we could like bring up just the short dialogue between well, I don't know if it's short, it felt really long to me, but it could have been like 30 seconds, I wouldn't have known, between Fred Willard and his assistant right after they meet David Soul for the first time.
Yeah.
And then the conversation they have after, it's like, what is anybody talking about?
Yeah.
I was watching this with my partner, Georgie, and she was just like, what, can you rewind? I think I missed something. I was like, I don't think you did. Maybe we just don't know what's going on. Maybe that's what makes it spooky.
So yeah,
a little, an echo and a reverb to that, please. Spooky.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. My fiance, she also mentioned too that, like, why are they just talking one word to each other? yes. I forget the scene. I think it's the cop and the Eastern European guy played by James Mason.
Striker,
yeah. And he's
dropping like that, yeah.
He's dropping off the suit or something, and they're just having like this really like vague conversation with each other about yeah. I need that back. I need to be washed. Or you know what I mean? Like it has like this really awful back and forth. Yeah. And she just pointed out, it's like, what are they talking about? What's going on there?
I feel like the whole time that the sheriff or I don't know what his whole thing is.
And not only characters just disappear, right? This movie.
Towards the end, I was like, maybe, I don't know, maybe none of this is supposed to make sense. I'm not sure what to take away from this. All I took away from it was, one of the things I took away from it was David Soul hates Jeeps and he hates doors. And he hates closing doors, and then he gets frustrated. Like I want people to tell me that all those scenes were all the outtakes of him just getting like fucking flustered, trying to close this stupid Jeep door that he has.
Yeah, he does. Somebody, I forget where I read it. Somebody mentioned that it could be a drinking game. How many times he tries to slam the door, close the door? It is.
It's like. Oh man, there's like a couple of scenes, one for sure, but I feel like there's more than one, where he slams a door and he like looks for a second, the door swings back open, and he just starts walking to wherever his destination is at.
Yeah.
Good thing it's a trusting, quiet town.
So we should probably, why don't we jump to just like complete spoilers? Let's just start from the beginning, okay. And then we'll just. Break it down, spoiler, one thing after another, okay? So.
Okay, yeah.
I just want to start right away. How old is David Soul? He was at least pushing 50, or 40, late 40s. And then he has like maybe a teenage love interest that he randomly picks up at a park.
yes.
Right?
And that scene too. If that's flirting, I've been doing it wrong my entire life. I didn't know you're supposed to be really awkward about it, a little pushy.
Go to dinner with me. Go to dinner with me.
Yeah.
Go to dinner with me. Pretty much is the.
Oh my God. Yeah. And then, what is it? What's her name? John McClane's wife? Bonnie Bedelia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what she's on about like half the movie. She like shows up and then she doesn't do anything for the story or the plot until later.
Pretty much, yeah.
When she decides to make bad decisions.
Pretty, you know, not a very strong written female part. And you know what's so funny is that he asked her to dinner and they end up just eating at their parents' house.
Oh, yeah.
She's right. Incredibly underage, I believe. Or the difference is so bad, right? I mean,
you remember that part, I guess, they decide to go to, I guess it's supposed to be a creek, but to me it looks like a fucking bog or something. When the vampires start popping up, they're at a, like something that looks like a swamp, having like a romantic, like pitch black evening, I guess. Right, and yeah. I think this is right after the hero in my eyes, Fred Willard. He doesn't do anything in the movie. He's just my hero, right? RIP guy. His car. He leaves. He gets kicked out of the house where his like secretary is at because I guess you find out that there's an affair, which I guess that was supposed to be like, let's make all the dialogue super ambiguous. That way this is a big reveal and it's like, oh, who cares? Okay, they're cheating.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Like, again, there's a truck driver that's married to the secretary. He lies about going to Portland or something for a job. Parks his truck super far away for no reason, grabs a sixer of beer, and then finishes it before he goes back to his house to pull a shotgun on Fred Willard, who could have attempted to act scared, to be honest, but
so
he was
yeah,
doing like hands are up, let me do like a grim face, and that was him being scared, and I was like, okay.
But he had his red underwear, his red boxers on.
Yeah. I was like, this is tense. And Fred Willard, I think, was like 40-something at that time, too. He was like late 40s. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at first, it's kind of hard to take Fred. I mean, the very next scene is like Fred Willard is like, just shows up as a real estate agent. I'm already laughing because it's Fred Willard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, he's going to be serious in this movie, isn't he? He's like, oh, he's going to be sleeping with his secretary, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
So.
But to be fair, I don't know if anybody was acting serious in this movie. I mean, yeah. Jeffrey Lewis, his transition into vampire was like wonderfully right? Horrible.
See, I'm glad you didn't like, well, Jeffrey Lewis is one of my favorite character actors.
And yeah, he's great. He's just kind of goofy in this, and I still liked it.
Yeah, at first he's playing a little drunk. He's playing, you know, like maybe on drugs or he's drunk or something. And then, you know, he goes full vampire after that.
And then he does Jeffrey Lewis's version of like sexy, I think. I'm not sure. He was acting sexy. He was a sexy vampire that was going to bite you.
Yeah, I'm an apologist for Jeffrey Lewis. I was yeah. I didn't have as much of an issue with his performance. So okay.
Yeah, yes. I thought his was the funniest, to be honest. He was really, really hamming it up. What I was getting at was after this confrontation between the secretary's husband and Fred Willard, Fred Willard runs out in his red underwear and he's trying to go to his car, and then there's like a, I can't call it a jump scare because you don't see anything, but there's a shift in the music, and then the next thing you know, our heroes are having their romantic date in the pitch dark by the bog, and they hear a car rolling up and hit their car, like, oh, what was that? But when they show it, it's like, was this car just like rolling into the other car? There was no real damage. It was just like he bumped the car.
Yeah, it's just state of the art. State of the art for 79.
It was so good. Oh, he goes, our hero goes back to the girl's parents' house, and the dad has like a quick conversation with him alone, saying like, hey, so I know you're dating my daughter. And he's like trying to defend himself, and he goes like, no, you seem like a good man. I'm like, what the hell city is this?
Yeah.
Everybody's so forgiving about this random stranger who I guess was born there.
Yeah.
He's a famous author that nobody knows.
He moved away. I think they said he moved away when he was 11.
Yeah, okay.
Something like that. Yeah, so he's not really like from the town. And I don't know. Yeah.
Because he goes, one of the other main characters is he goes to visit his old principal, theater teacher, English professor, question marks all around. I'm not sure what he is.
Yeah. You know, the best part of that scene was he goes up. So they're doing the play, right? They're doing the play of whatever, 1776, whatever. And he interrupts him, you know, teaching. And then he says before the end, oh, shh, this part, to the to the teacher. And I'm like, it's awfully presumptuous of David Soult. Just shush. Even though he interrupted the principal. I was just odd. That was super odd. It just threw me off. I'm like, what's going on?
And it's, I guess, to introduce our other protagonist, the kid,
mm-hmm.
who is a collector of horror memorabilia and like reads all these books, so he knows what to do. Who also, okay, there's a cold open to this movie that makes no sense. If the original versions didn't have the end sequence, you know what I mean? So the cold open is, David and the young kid, who I just assume were like, are they like father and son? What's the deal here? And they're like in a church, and they have another cryptic conversation about going further in, which doesn't make any sense later either. Like, I guess it kind of does, but not really. And then you don't get introduced to this kid until like, oh, he's in the play. And then it's like, he's not related to this guy at all.
Yeah.
So if the end sequence, the end scene, which we'll talk about later, if that wasn't a part of the original films, it would be like a weird cold open.
So when I, yeah, so it opens with them, they're in Guatemala and they're at a church and they're getting like holy water or something, right? And then the holy water starts glowing for no reason. And well,
that's an indication that there's a vampire nearby. I'm going to get this wrong. It's one of those old things like, oh, garlic and crosses and blah, blah, blah. Holy water will glow in your hand if there's a vampire nearby.
Oh, okay. Like a tell or something, like a way of indicating it.
It's also supposed to boil, which they didn't do. But
so that's where it starts. And then, of course, it bookends the end of the movie where they pretty much picks up where they are and they go and they go look for the vampire. So I thought, I'm confused because are they running from the vampires or are they hunting vampires?
I thought, I mean, because the end is our hero's underage girlfriend gets bit and then she disappears and they don't show her leaving or disappearing. She ends up in Guatemala somehow.
Age inappropriate, right? I don't know if she's underage. Just really like huge age difference between the actor and the actress. Yeah, it was so noticeable and kind of ridiculous. But she ends up showing up and of course, she was in Guatemala for no reason. And then they kill her.
They caught her as asleep. He wakes her up to have one more like awkward, we love each other, even though the whole movie I was just like, no, you should get out of here. No, we don't have to see each other all the time. Like this guy was being such a jerk about her being really into him the whole movie. And then they have this like weird thing at the end where he's like, oh, maybe I did like you a lot. It's like, okay.
So what did you think of the way the vampires hypnotized the people? Yeah, I like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes more sense. It makes sense that they're able to do that. That way there's no real fight until the end. I think his name is actually Straker.
Yeah, Richard Cage Straker, yeah.
I don't understand what he's supposed to be. I mean, I was like, oh, he's like the Renfield, right?
Uh-huh, yeah. That's what I thought.
Then I thought like, oh, okay, maybe he's like one of those like super ghouls like in Fright Night, right? Where he was made of, I don't know what. No, this one, he's like super strong. But then he's taken down by a gun pretty quickly.
Yeah, that was confusing. Yeah, I think they set it up. The young boy mentions that ghouls serve a certain purpose, right? Like they're the muscles or something. So and then the very next scene is when his friends, the boys, the brothers, the Glick brothers, they end up getting turned into vampires when they're headed home, right? And he's a part of it. So I'm assuming like, I thought that was the setup for it, that he was the ghoul and then I came to think like, maybe he's just the assistant for Dracula. Right. So.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say when he get introduced to them, that was the confusing part. Because it's like a solid 20 seconds of Straker first getting to that house and then David Soul randomly pops up in his Jeep, gets out of the Jeep, I think, has trouble with his door. That's the first time you get introduced to the Jeep's door.
That's the first shot. Take your first shot. Yeah.
Which I gotta admit, the door stole the show for me. He like looks at him, Straker turns around and it's daylight. So that's where you're like, oh, okay, he's not a vampire. And they just like stare at each other for a while. And then he walks inside the house. And then later at night, David Soul goes back to the house, stares at the house. Straker shows up behind him. They stare at each other for like, I don't know, an awkward amount of time. And then Straker goes, good evening. And then like walks away. And I was like, oh, okay.
He didn't look back twice. He looked back twice, like checking him out. Like,
oh, yeah. So I was like, oh, this is a good setup to establish that these guys are awkward.
Right. And then another random character that disappeared was Weasel, the town drunk.
Oh, yeah.
He played by Elijah Cook Jr. Never heard of him before. Yeah. But he... yeah, I thought he would. I mean, he's chewing the scenery, you know, in this movie. Yeah. He's just big. Every choice is big. There's no subtlety to any of his acting in this movie. And he plays like the town drunk. And he's at some point, the police chief asked them to find information about the writer because he's suspicious of him.
Yeah, yeah. He has him spy on him, which it looked like he was doing that already. So, and I think he mentions that too. He's like, oh, are you spying on them? Well, I need you to spy on them. I'm like, oh, okay.
And he does. And then he doesn't share the information, doesn't really, just that he reads a little bit about his book, which, okay, his book. So that it definitely gave me Cootie vibes because he's gonna fuck the house, right?
Yeah, he's gonna fuck the house. Which, okay, the connection to the book, like, oh, his new story, it's about this house that, I guess, as a child, he's like, it's evil, but I'm being drawn back to the house. And then there's supposed to be this like revelation moment where his old teacher's like, but if the house only attracts evil, he's like, then why am I attracted to it too? But then that's about the end of that. I don't think it goes anywhere.
Never explored further. Yeah, nothing else comes of it.
No, just my book's about this house. It's evil. Like, no, I think like the vampires are evil. I don't know if the house has anything to do with it.
I mean, that is maybe another little thing I did like was they gave a little bit of history to the house. You know, the house looks great. The house is very well designed. Looks amazing.
They did a fucking great job. I mean, that was just a front facade, and then a sound studio on the inside. Look, awesome.
Yeah, that was what had a lot of personality, that house. It was like, that's an evil house, right? I mean, even inside, the interior as well was really well, you know, decorated. Really, really, really good. Yeah, that's one thing King does. He has a lot of history to places like The Shining. All that past history. And you get a little bit of it that whoever lived there before killed his wife, killed his maid, and killed a couple of children. So there's like inheritance to that house, which is why the vampires were attracted to that place in the first, you know, the very beginning. So I thought that was kind of cool. That was like a nice little detail lost in this movie.
Yeah, but, because all this information just seemed like they couldn't decide, or they couldn't stick to just like one main storyline. They really wanted to put as much of the book into this, and it was just like fragments, so it didn't make any sense to me. But can we talk about the makeup of these vampires? Like most notably the Nosferatu-esque like main bad guy. What's his name?
Bram something, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
They give him a really generic name, don't they?
Well, I wish they didn't have him talk, or they didn't have any real sound for him. I kind of wish he was just quiet, because the first time you see him, he, like when he pops out in the jail cell, right? He's he's the friend of what's his name again?
Yeah,
Jeffrey Lewis's friend.
The whiny
other. Yeah, the other trucker.
Ned. Ned.
So he gets mad at David's soul for some reason, right?
Yeah, because it's not explicitly said, but it's insinuated that what's her name in the movie? Susan was seeing Ned at some point, but Ned seems like he's being like maybe they broke up and he can't get over it or something. Because yeah. Their first meeting's at a school and he's like totally just like stalking her.
That's right.
But she's with Ben, and then she's like, okay, I can handle this. And they end up talking about like, he's like, get in the car. And then she's like, I'm not getting in the car. You need to leave or something like that. That's pretty much the extent of it. And then he goes in with, Jeffrey Lewis's character, Mike, and they pick up the coffin or whatever, the Dracula character.
Oh my God, that scene. Sorry, I could go off on that scene too. It was just too funny. So
in that scene, Ned is constantly complaining. It's cold. It's cold. And he's like rubbing his hands together and like, everything is cold. We got to do something. And so Jeffrey Lewis's character immediately says, shut up. You're not letting me drive. And I was literally thinking the same thing. I was like, shut up and let the guy drive.
Oh man. But before that, I couldn't get over them loading up that crate. So they load up this crate, which is supposed to be like a headboard. Like they could have picked something. They could have picked anything else that would seem appropriate for that size box, but no, it's a headboard, right? I guess they just like ultra packed the shit out of that box. They're touching it like, oh, it's cold. And then that other guy's like, we should open it to see what's inside. I was like, what the fuck? No, dude. Stop being bad at your job. So they drop the lift gate, right? They put the box onto the lift gate. And then the next scene, they're having a conversation the whole time. Jeffrey Lewis is already pushing up the lift gate to close up. And they never move the box from the lift gate, but the box shifted into the back of the truck. And then they didn't strap it down. But then I guess it's explained later, like, is the box moving? It's like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, how'd they not notice this like huge box just like move like 6 feet into the truck?
I had the same thought. I was like, they didn't strap that down. just sitting in the middle.
Nor did they actually put it in the truck. it just kind of happened.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. Yeah, this is one of those movies that is a total, I think, a relic of its time. Like, it's definitely a movie that was probably very scary, very different for its time. But at this point, I mean, it's not nearly as effective as it could be.
Yeah. So in its defense, I guess I heard later, this was the first like film movie, like any sort of film or television show that had a vampire that wasn't in like a Victorian era, like the latest, right? It was like supposed to be present day, small town USA. And that was like unheard of. So that was supposed to be like the iconic part of it for like a Stephen King book. And the vampire, like our like head vampire, I guess, had more dialogue in the book. And was supposed to be super handsome. So it was like a very a la Fright Night sort of deal. I mean, even though Fright Night came out after, right?
Right.
I guess not too far after, but like the book came out way before. So like all these differences, I think they were really trying to make it like Nosferatu and like bring back the essence of evil. And it's like man is evil too. You don't have to make him look like a kind of like a rat, like like a blue rat whose makeup keeps cracking. That's one of the problems they had during filming, is every time they had a close-up they got frustrated because that actor's makeup kept cracking in half.
Yeah, I thought the makeup and the contacts were pretty effective, like
I was gonna say, I think you shouldn't have said any like or kind of talked, because like the first time we meet him again, he's coming into like the jail cell where that dude who went to go beat up our hero gets thrown in the slammer. And he pops out kind of like a jump scare, and it almost sounds like he's going, "Ma." He does that like for a split second, and I lost my shit. I could not stop laughing.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, God, no. I mean,
yeah, because I don't remember him talking. I don't remember him talking.
No, he doesn't actually talk. It's just more of like, oh. And he does like small things like that. Not throughout the thing. So it's not super ridiculous. But when you do listen, it's like, oh, okay.
The kid
was creepy. I like the kid, the first kid that turns into a
vampire.
Where you have that moment you see in like almost every like teen vampire movie now, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They have like what's his name?
That's what I'm.
David Arquette, right?
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of actually. Yeah, was him. So and him. It's actually pretty. I mean, it's well done scene. It's him, a kid trying to like seduce or trying to get into the house so he can. Eat his brother, right? Or turn his brother into a vampire. I don't know, man. I've never been a vampire guy overall. I'm not a. It's a hard genre for me, you know.
It's a little tough. I mean, you got some good ones, but you got like Lost Boys. I think is pretty solid.
Yeah.
Fright Night, I like a lot. But I guess there's like a very specific type of vampire movies, or like 80s, edgy teen vampires, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. Just kind of wrapping up here. Just, do you have any last thoughts about Salem's Lot?
I'm glad I watched it, I guess. I feel like this is supposed to be one of those iconic, legendary horror films. Will I ever watch it again? No. Will I recommend it? Absolutely not. I guess there's a remake with Rutger Hauer as the main vampire. Maybe watch that instead. But I can't in good conscience say I like this movie.
Yeah, same. I think we're pretty much on the same track there. I didn't really enjoy this movie. I thought it was too long. I thought there were too many poor jump scares. Just not very, in terms of modern context, it's not up to the standard, I guess.
It's not it. No, it's not there. It is, again, I appreciate what it is, and I appreciate it's like the first Stephen King TV movie adaptation, and it was supposed to be like revolutionary.
So I guess it does have that horror footnote then, right? Then in horror itself, then it has that footnote that it was the movie they made after Carrie, the first TV movie.
Right, yeah. But I feel like I can say, we were talking about Black Sabbath earlier, right? The movie came out in 1960, 1950 something, I don't know. That movie, I feel like I can watch now, and at least that first story will still kind of scare the shit out of me.
Right, yeah.
And that's before this, you know. This one, I was never scared. I think I was, like, laughing more often than not. Just because it was so silly. It seemed so ridiculous. And my partner, again, she was saying, like, why is everybody talking like this? I think you're telling me, right? Your fiance Candy was like saying the same deal, like why do people talk like this? And then I just started defending it, saying like, I'm sorry, have you ever been to Salem's Lot, Massachusetts? Right, Massachusetts, or where are they?
Maine.
Yeah. Like that's just the way they talk. The New English side of America, they just all talk in very short sentences. Everybody knows each other, so they're on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
It's going to take vampires to disrupt all that.
Yeah.
So there is a sequel to this.
Oh, yeah.
Which apparently goes even further off the rails. And it's like the vampires are trying to take over the town because they want their story heard, which I'm like, okay. Wow. So, yeah, I was wondering how you can make it sillier.
So you're saying you want to add this to the list? We're not watching next week's movie you chose. We're going on the Salem Lot train. We're going to watch the next.
Yeah, but to give it a fair assessment, we have to rewatch this and then immediately go into the second one.
Yeah, and then we'll read the book. And then, I don't know. And then we'll watch the Rob Lowe remake. Yeah.
Oh, another footnote to this is, I guess, originally this script was supposed to be called...
Jerusalem's Lot.
Jerusalem, but before that, it was called Second Coming. And I guess like it was supposed to be like Stephen King's idea of like, oh, the vampires are coming again or something like that. But his wife told him, you know, that sounds like a kind of like a dumb sex joke more than it sounds like a scary movie title. So,
yeah. On that note, let's wrap up our Salem's Lot review.
Quick, maybe that's why all the vampires were so sexy when they were vampires.
Ah, yes.
Maybe that original title gives more context than we think. Spooky second. Whoa, what was that? Oh, I clicked. Did you hear that? I accidentally dropped my notepad on my spacebar and it made a bunch of sound effects right when I said that.
Wow. Look at that.
Or maybe it's vampires. I don't know. I guess should we, you want me to tell you what we're watching next week?
Yeah, sure.
Or by next week. Mm-hmm. Black Sunday, a 1960 film by Mario Bava.
A classic movie. Check it out. And all right. So that should end it. Keep it spooky.
All right. Keep it spooky.
All right.
That was a spoiler.